Thank you for listening to this latest Fast Talkers podcast. This is our 25th episode of Formula E special. And if you'd like to subscribe, you can go to your usual podcast provider. Thanks for listening. Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of Fast Talkers as we go electric. Yes, it's the start of the Formula E season and I've got a panel of guests to talk about season 7. So let's go over to Saudi Arabia and join our journalist extraordinaire from Formula E. It is Hazel Southwell. We'll start with you. Hazel, lovely to see you. I'm glad you got out there safe and sound. And you're still in quarantine by the looks of it.
Yes, until tomorrow. Tomorrow is when we finally get to go to the track.
Jack Nicholls, you're out of quarantine, which is excellent news. You've passed your COVID swabs and all of that stuff. Aggressive swabbing out there, I hear. By the way, Jack Nicholls is the commentator for Formula E and F1.
It's just very precise swabbing. So when I got my test on the way out, I went to a little place in Watford and it was actually the most painful COVID test I've ever had, like really hurt right at the back of my head. And then she started going 10, 9, and like doing this really slow countdown, and it really, really hurt. And then the same in your mouth. But here, one jab right into your heart, and that gets everything, I imagine. So yeah, different techniques around the world. That's something we're experiencing.
Sounds like everyone's got a lot to look forward to going to Saudi. good, thanks for selling it. Staff writer at Autosport, Matt Q, also joins us from his hotel room. Matt, you were swabbed this morning, I believe.
Yeah, absolutely. We all have an app to log into when we arrive here, which has proved a bit difficult. But yeah, managed to go out, and like Jack says, it's a bit like ripping the plaster off, so it's in and out quickly, whereas in boots, they talk you through it and it sort of prolongs the agony a little bit. But fingers crossed for some negative results.
Yeah, fingers crossed, absolutely. It sounds almost like a waxing experience where it's incredibly painful, but over very quickly, Jack.
Well, it's like they tell you to say ah, and you go, oh, okay, I'll say ah. But before you even say ah, it's in you and you're choking. So that's that's how quick they are with it.
The things you do for the sport you love, hey?
Yeah.
Right, season 7 is about to start, and as you can probably work out, the season starts in Saudi Arabia. It's going to be a night race. Jack, you've composed a lot of stats because you do comms, so you have to. Tell us, what are the things that you're most looking forward to about this season?
Every year in Formula E is entirely unpredictable, even when you think, oh, well, they should be at the front. Are they going to be? And I think that's going to be the big question. DS Techeeta last year dominated. They've won the last 3 championships. Amazing, great, good for them. But they're starting this year with last year's car. They are going to have the likes of Mercedes going into their second full season as a proper manufacturer. The likes of Nissan coming back at them, who have already won championships in the past with EDAM. So there's just no... You can predict, I think, the bottom 3 teams, I would say, in the championship. I would have a bit of a guess at who's going to be there. Anything else is just, or it is just guesswork. Like, and that's what is quite exciting about Formula E every year. You arrive not really having any clue what's going to happen. Everyone looks quite strong. Should be great.
You've got to really echo Jack's sentiments. I think, yeah, between DS Techeeta, they're the benchmark. Nissan are improving. Mercedes and Porsche, okay, they are new to Formula E to some extent, but there's just an expectation from fans and probably their boardroom that they should win. Even you know, Mahindra had problems last year. They've fixed the fix. So all we can go off really is pre-season testing, which is 87 days ago, which is, so that's one for Jack's stats. But that feels like a world away. But even then, although we've got Valencia on the calendar for this season, it'll be a different layout. So that, as a benchmark, remains as unrepresentative as ever. So even BMW and Audi, who are strong there and need to deliver in their last seasons of Formula E, there's no guarantee that, you know, while they've made improvements, there's nothing to say that DS Techeeta and Nissan, the standout teams of last season, haven't increased their advantage as well.
When I was writing up some stuff, like some season preview content, I realised like quite how far back a lot of the teams that you think of as front runners ended up last season. Like Audi were way down in 6th, which I think is their worst performance ever, even like as ABT before and then as the Audi factory team. And like, honestly, Formula E's front to midfield is kind of all the same lump. It's like there are some back marker teams, there are some teams who have struggled, who we can probably assume will continue to struggle. But the vast majority of teams could be up there. And that's actually really exciting.
Audi is a great example where, yeah, they finished outside of the top three for the first time ever in Formula E last year. It was the first time Degrassi didn't finish in the top three either. I said this to Alan McNish. I was like, oh, it seems like you might have a good car this year, because that's been kind of the chatter. And he goes, we have a good car every year. And I was like, well, not last year. And he was like, well, no, actually, if you look at it, every single race, there was an Audi or an Envision Virgin who use Audi powertrains nearish the front and in the mix. But that's the thing with Formula E. Everyone can win a one-off race, but it's building that consistency over the year that people find so challenging.
Please don't do that accent of Alan again. It was shocking, Jack.
It's about right.
Not sure about that. Hazel, there's been plenty of driver changes as well to look forward to. And I think that's quite spicy. That's got people excited.
Yeah, definitely. I think the one that's probably most noticeable is Sam Bird going to Jaguar. Jaguar, every year now for at least the last 2 years, have been in a position where they could win races. Last season, they were definitely in a position where they could have taken the championship. With Mitch Evans, it all horribly fell apart in Berlin, but I think we can assume that probably things might have played out differently in a different season, which obviously isn't the season we had, so that's all irrelevant. But their problem has been that Mitch has overwhelmingly scored their points. Like, he scored more than 80% of their points in most seasons. If they'd had Sam's haul of points, which was pretty low for him last year, in addition to Mitch's, they would have ended up way further up the championship. So I think we can assume that Jaguar, I mean, not that they've never meant business before, but that they're really kind of gunning for a strong performance this year. They're not going to let BMW and Audi trying to go out on a high stand in their way. Sam and Mitch also hit each other in Diriyah, and it is the most annoyed I have ever seen either of them. And the only time I properly see Mitch have a go at another driver in media pen. So, could be spicy.
We like things like that, little facts that you can bring to us. That's excellent. I also saw Sam rather cross in Marrakesh last season when he was pulled up to the platform to speak to us on the telly. And then we didn't ever get time to speak to him. And then we sent him away. He wasn't best pleased then either. Luckily, no fisticuffs. But we know Effie does have a reputation for fisticuffs. Season one, from the very start. Jack, who's going to be laying into each other this year? That was a bit of a tabloid headline, sorry.
Yeah, no, but I like it. I think that...
Can you use that later if you want.
Yeah, thanks. The Evans-Bird fight is going to be really interesting because I think it's a really brave move from Sam Bird, actually, to go to a team that is... Mitch Evans is, really, and he's never really had competition. You know, he's obviously highly rated, Mitch Evans. I rate him really, really highly. And it's going to be a really tough challenge for Sam. He could have just stayed at Envision, hanging out with his mate, Robin Frantz, and just dossing around doing whatever they do. But, you know, he's made this change because he wants to be competitive and he wants to win the championship, which I think is, I really sort of respect those moves. It's a similar move to DaCosta last year. You know, DaCosta last year was a make or break year to my mind, because either if he gets beaten by Vern at Dies to Cheetah, then it's clear that DaCosta is not a top line driver. He's very good. But if he's beaten by Vern, then okay, he's not quite at that level. But to beat Vern the way he did, I thought was impressive. But we saw so many signs of it last year, of that inter-team rivalry at Dies to Cheetah. I think that's where it could really all kick off. I think they have a fundamental respect for one another, for sure. But, and Vern even kind of convinced DaCosta to go there. But we saw in Santiago last year, we sort of saw in Mexico last year, we sort of saw in Berlin last year, the rivalry between them is pretty intense. And so if they have the best car again, I think that's the team I see it kicking off at the most.
I don't think they're necessarily that great at managing it, because as you say, yeah, about Vern getting hold of DaCosta and also recruiting Lotto to an extent, he's sort of more than just a regular driver for that team. But it was a team. It was a pit wall that was too slow to swap positions at times that season. I think sort of the worrying thing for Verne is we saw his sort of perhaps more sulky temperament come back a lot towards the end of last season when he realised he'd been beaten by Da Costa. And I think a lot of the issues for both drivers in the early part of the season came with the lack of confidence under the brakes. And they'll, of course, work to fix that, and they think they have fixed that. But if Da Costa comes out fighting and sort of and puts Verne in his place for the next few races, I think, yeah, that temperament could lead to sort of a good narrative which we can exploit and write about lots.
Why is it that we seem to get a lot more kind of public fighting, for want of a better word, between drivers in Formula E than almost any other championship I know? Jack, we work in F1 together. You don't seem to get the same kind of confrontation between drivers that you do in FE. Why?
I think a lot of it is sort of circumstance. You know, you think back to Hamilton, Rosberg, and I would say that was fairly confrontational, you know, overall. And I think not people have a lot more to prove in Formula E, because that isn't exactly what I mean. But in each team, it's very much a battle to be number one and at the top of that team. Whereas for some reason in Formula One, and I think it's just how the teammate pairings have sort of shaken out over the years. You know, you think of Ocon and Perez, you know, there was quite a bit of angst there. But there's also the openness of Formula E that you don't get in Formula One. You know, we're playing the team radios out live, and then after the race, Hazel and Matt are there to speak to them. That's kind of about it. You know what I mean? Like, there are other media people, obviously, and there's, you know, the pen is quite bustly, but it's not like in F1 where it's a full debrief and then you come and chat once everybody's calmed down. You're just straight into the thick of the action all the time. If something dodgy's happened in qualifying, these drivers will come and find Matt and Hazel and me. Like, drivers come and get me and be like, this guy's doing this, it's a load of BS, you know, which you don't get in Formula One, but that happens in Formula E. So I think it's just the sort of nature of the championship, really.
I think it is the nature of the championship. Also, it's a really open paddock. There is no separation. So, like, if you really hate this guy who's just annoyed you so much and blocked you in qualifying, you're going to have to sit next to him over lunch. And like, that really, really amps things up, because there's no motorhomes. There's no like locking yourself away with your team. You've got to exist in the same really quite small space. So you can't hide. Like, if you're the guy who did the blocking, then you can't hide from him. And like, the number of times you see the emotions like properly spill out, and it partly is because it really matters to them. And also because if you've done FP1 at flipping 6 a.m. when it was freezing cold in the dark, and then you've done FP2, and then you've done qualifying and that's annoyed you, and then some idiot hit you off in like the 37th minute of a 45 minute race, then you are probably going to be like riled in a way that I think, yeah, over a different weekend, it's like the team would get hold of you and be like, all right, calm down, shut up. Like, don't say that. Whereas in Formula E, there just isn't that level of separation. Like, you can't cool them down fast enough.
But also, there's sort of the format of Formula E, to sort of extend Asia's point, is a pressure cooker. You know, qualifying sessions have been only 6 minutes, 4 minutes for this year. A race is only 45 minutes. So you don't get what you had sort of in Formula One with George Russell losing out in his battle with the Mercedes and then having another opportunity to come back through. One mistake and it's pretty much curtains. And also, I think to a point as well, there's not as much sort of PR constriction on Formula E drivers as there is in Formula One. So they're allowed to express themselves a bit more. But sort of what Jack says, you know, it is about, we speak to the guys instantly. When Formula E in a week's time will release their best radio clips of the debrief, if you call up the drivers and speak to them about it, they take back a lot of what they say, because they've had time to reflect on it and sort of realise it probably doesn't paint them in the greatest light. So yeah, it's a bit of a pressure cooker environment, but that's good for, you know, the job that we're all trying to do, really, which is not only write about the championship, but a bigger picture is it's good for Formula E because it draws more mass media attention to it if you get some nice glossy headlines and some good sound bites.
And just two little things on Matt's point. Not only do you have it's a 45-minute race, but there's half the amount of races in a season that there are in F1. If you get knocked out of eighth place in F1 and you lose your 4 points, okay, well, we've got another 22 races to go, but there's so fewer FE races. And drivers are actively encouraged to be more normal people. You know, the amount of team PRs here who are like, oh, right, well, we've signed this driver, but I have to, like, get him out of the corporate mindset and get him to be interesting. Because if my driver's interesting, that's the only way he's going to cut through. Sam Bird, again, is a great example of someone who, when he came in to the sport, we honestly didn't really bother interviewing him because you knew exactly what he was going to say. He's going to say, thanks to the team, thanks to the, you know, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, whatever. But 6 years down the line, he now says interesting things because he's an interesting guy. And that, it's almost like the reverse process to something like F1, where people come in a bit unpolished. And then before you know it, they're all polished up.
Maybe in that time you just started asking better questions, Jack.
Yes, yeah, it's probably that.
Hazel, who is your favourite person in the paddock to talk to interview? Not just Jack. You can't say Jack or Matt. That's ruled out.
It has to be Lucas Degrassi. Degrassi is absolute, like, headline gold. And he knows, I think, this about him. And, like, to be honest, if I was a driver, I would probably be quite similar. Like, I would just walk into a press conference and say the most bizarre stuff I could think of because it would get published. Like, in season 5, when we got the brake-by-wire system in, all of the drivers were like, oh, brake-by-wire is great. It's just so much better. Like, the regen is easier. Like, everything is so much better. You're not constantly adjusting things. Like, you can concentrate on the racing. It's brilliant. Such a great advance. And I was like, I bet I can get Lucas to say it's bad. And he was like, oh, yes, it's a driver aid. Amazing. I love him.
Matt's favourite person.
Hang on, no criticism of that impression.
Well, it was so poor that I just wanted to kind of almost ignore it. And we had a little bit of technical issue at the same time. Hazel, unmute yourself and do it again. Go on.
Oh no, I'm not doing another Lucas impression. I already regret having done it once. The person you need to do a Lucas impression is Shiv Gohill, the photographer. He does a very accurate one.
I was going to say, is it good or bad? I don't know which one I would want more.
Oh, no, it is good.
Okay. Jack, do you want to give it a go, a Lucas Degrassi impression? You seem so keen to comment.
No, I want to, but I've never thought about it before. No, you know what? I'm going to pass.
Okay. Thanks. Matt?
I won't do the impression, but my favourite people to speak to is when you get the two Mahindra guys, Alex Sims and Alex Lynn, together, because former ego's out the window and it's just a tennis match between Alan Partridge quotes, and that's just good fun at the end of the day.
Jack, on that note, you normally do the Virgin team's sort of social fun and hijinks, but that's always been the Jack Nicholls, Frines and Bird show. What are you going to do without Frines and Bird together? Are you still doing them?
No, bidding it off. Because I think there's a, I certainly felt, we're doing a new thing with Envision Virgin Racing called On Charge, which is a bit sort of longer form. You can see it on their YouTube channel, longer form stuff with Robin Frantz and Nick Cassidy. But it's like anything that I think, you know, you have to know when to go out at the right time, you know?
And this is Jack Nicholls saying this. I'm amazed. Okay. Lockdown has done a lot for you.
No, but you look at something like, what's a good example? The Office, the US Office, when Steve Carell leaves, that's when you end the show. That's when you end the show. When a major cast member, you don't try and carry on without them. That's not the way things work. So I think that's you wouldn't, if you couldn't do Fast Talkers anymore, you wouldn't do Jenny Gow's Fast Talkers hosted by Mark Priestley, because that would just be rubbish, not only because of Mark, but also because of, like, the whole concept of you are Fast Talkers, you know? You got to know when to, you know, it's time.
I don't know.
I love Mark.
We all love Mark. Having done the kids takeover in half term last week, I feel like I should just hang up, give up right now. They were all so incredible. But you can still watch that, by the way, on the YouTube channel. No problems there. Best driver pairing going into this season. I think we've already touched on it, but I'd like to know a little bit more of your thoughts. Matt, let's start with you.
I'm going to dive in.
Don't look so confused. It's not an out of the ordinary question.
No, I know, but I've already thought about this, but I can't remember who I thought was the answer, so I'm just going to have a look.
Thank you for letting me go first, because it's an easy one. It's Da Costa and Vern. I think the only other real choice is probably Bird and Evans at Jaguar. But yeah, I think, you know, they're the only team to have two world champion drivers. You know, they've won the most recent three drivers championships between them. So it's them in terms of what they've achieved, but also their sort of their one lap pace, the race pace. The line I keep writing in my Autosport reports is that if this is like a football manager team, you know, you have Mark Preston leading it, you have that car, and you have Vernon Da Costa as your drivers. That's your fantasy football setup. There's no need to alter that, and I think that carries over into this season. They're the best pair.
Matt, if people are playing along with Fantasy Formula E, you've just ruined it for everybody. You've just told them exactly what to do for the whole season.
I apologise, but if there's not such a thing yet, can I take like a copyright of that and start earning a bit of money on the side?
Only if you actually put in the work. Oh.
It's called FE Predictor, and if you go to like predictor.faaformulae.com, you can make your own league.
Jack,
great prize at the end of the year as well for that.
It's not to
predictor.
Meet you, is it?
Yeah. that's the loser's prize. That's the wooden spoon. I stand there with a little wooden spoon.
Jack, talking about wooden spoons, like I'm going to digress slightly, but look, this is actually a wooden spoon I won doing motorsport.
We won.
Well, yes, we won it or lost it. I don't know. We won the wooden spoon for being the worst at the Williams pub quiz. And that's signed by, is it Valtteri Bottas and Felipe Massa?
Yeah.
So that tells you how old the wooden spoon is. Didn't know we'd be talking about wooden spoons today. It just happens to be on my desk.
Any Bottas or Massa accents come to mind, Jenny?
Nope. Absolutely not, because at some point I am going to have to go back into the paddock. And I know those guys like to watch this as well. So, no. Jack, rescue me.
I just have this weird thing this year about Nissan EDAMs. That's my top driver pairing on the grid. Oliver Rowland and Sebastian Buemi. And sometimes I think I'm mad saying that, but I just can't help but be super impressed by Rowland. Buemi kind of speaks for himself. And if I were actually doing my fantasy Formula E team, I think I'd be having Buemi and Van Dorn would be my two drivers. Because I think Van Dorn's a little magician. I think he's absolutely great. And I think Buemi is I think he's the best overall package there is in Formula E. So, and they've got a great working relationship, Buemi and Rowland. Nissan, they've always been good. And they had the best car in season 5, the fastest car in season 5. But then their powertrain tech got banned and they were all out of the loop really for season 6. Then there was that huge gap before the final race in Berlin, which allowed them to catch back up as if they'd had pre-season. And suddenly they're at the front, they're winning races. They're Oliver Rowland's on the top step. Buemi picked up 2 podiums in Berlin. Dark and stealth-like, and Buemi and Rowland are not exactly like flamboyant. They're both hilarious and they're both great, but they're not exactly racing driver types, are they? But I think that something about them I really, really think is going to be amazing this year.
I love it. Two quite experienced racing drivers, and Jack Nicholls of all people says, well, they're not racing driver types,
you know,
are they?
You know what I mean. They're not wearing, I'm sure they like their sunglasses, but they're not wearing like the cool dude sunglasses. And you know that they'll know what I mean.
I'd stop talking now, Jack. You just called other people uncool. Hazel, help. Who's the best pairing?
I think the best pairing on the grid in terms of what the team needs, which, you know, that is what you're looking for. In picking your drivers, it's actually at Neo 333, which they are not in a good place as a team. They're in a better place, much, much better place than they were last year, in the sense the team hasn't just like completely imploded and had to salvage a car out of like bits of stuff they found. But in terms of a teammate pairing that can help in bringing them forwards, in doing what Lisheng want to do, which is building this experience at an international level of motorsport for particularly a Chinese team. I think that Tom Blomqvist, who is very patient driver, he's very experienced. He's got patience backmarking in Formula E, which is a really frustrating thing to do. But he did spend some time in Andretti when they were terrible. And Oliver Turvey, who is very, very dedicated to that team. He's got a lot of experience in terms of trying to incrementally make things better, in terms of exploiting opportunities where you can, even in what is fundamentally not necessarily a great car or operationally a great team. And again, a lot of patience. He's also got the experience of, because he works for McLaren as well. And when I interviewed him a while ago, he was saying like, actually the experience of like McLaren's recovery has been something that he's kind of fed into and thought about a lot in terms of rebuilding that team. So in terms of the strongest possible pairing for a particular team, I would say Blomqvist and Turvey.
When I said the DSGT guys, I thought it was a bit of a foregone conclusion, but we've just named eight, well, between us, including Evans and Bird, eight different drivers, which it says a lot about the quality of the Formula E team, like, or the Formula E grid. I mean, I've asked some drivers where do they rate it, and they say, oh, any of us can do a top job in Formula One. I don't think that's quite true. Yeah, some of them have missed out on opportunities or haven't probably, you know, gone as far as they could have. But you have to accept your Hamiltons, your Verstappens, your Clerks are probably a peg above most of these guys. But all of them, I think you could plonk into Formula One and do a respectable job. And that's not to say like Formula E was the next best option available to them. I just think it says, especially when all the cars look the same and we're like converging around this really dull colour palette of like black and green and light blue, which signifies electricity, apparently. It's great that the drivers are sort of like the standout point, because that, you know, aside from the technology, which doesn't appeal to everyone, the drivers are why you come and watch Formula E, I reckon.
Right, let's talk opening races, because it's a little bit different this time out.
I'm just excited to see what it looks like, honestly. And I think cars under lights just look great. We see it in F1, in Bahrain and in Singapore. And this will be our first chance seeing it in Formula E. There's been some dark running before. You might have seen Jaguar strap some lights on the front of their cars so they can get the most amount of testing in on their sort of 12 hours test days that they're allowed to do, and they start really early in the morning with lights on the car. There was also, as Hazel mentioned earlier, free practice in Marrakesh that was pretty dark and pretty cold. But the thing about it being a night race in Formula E in the desert is it's going to be getting colder as the race goes on, whereas that's going to be something new for the teams in terms of a technical challenge.
I'll be interested to hear what the others think, but yeah, it looks good, but it won't make too much of a difference. So the drivers will run with tinted visors, or sorry, clear visors opposed to tinted, and the lights will illuminate the circuit. Most of them have experience of racing in the dark anyway at Le Mans, so it's not going to be wholesale, but it's more sort of the minutiae. So like, you know, teams for the first time have had to contend with dimming the lights on the steering wheel so they're not a distraction, because we've raced in the day up until now. As you drive past, you know, the floodlights, if they flash in your mirrors, is that a distraction? Is it going to make, you know, are you going to lose textures on the track, which makes it not correlate to the what they've done in the simulator? It's more the finer details, but it'll be a good thing to look at. And we've got a slightly revised track layout here as well. So there's a few sort of curveballs to keep it interesting. But I'd be interested if the other guys have spoken to drivers and any of them have come up and said, oh, it's going to be a completely different experience.
For the drivers, I don't think it'll be some crazy different kind of thing, but it's a spectacle thing, isn't it? Really, that's why it's happening. It's not as some new challenge for the drivers. It's a whole kind of, this will look cool, won't it? Let's do it.
So we'll be running at like 8 p.m. local time at the start time, which is the point at which the temperature, because it will have been dark for a couple of hours effectively here by that point. And the temperature starts like dropping off a cliff, because obviously deserts don't retain heat at all. It just like sharply drops. And because there's not a massive amount of running on this track as well, I don't think there'll be a huge amount of retained heat. There's a lot of dust. You get a bit of wind pickup at night, especially you can feel it after the race ends in Derry. You definitely sort of feel there's sort of thermal activity because the desert is cooling down basically. And I think like in terms of grip, they're going to have, obviously by the end of a race, if you've only had one set of tyres, then you're losing grip by the end, whatever. But as like lines get dustier, there's more wind, there's more kind of variation on the track. The track's getting cold, the tyres are getting really ragged. I think it's going to be really interesting, especially because actually, weirdly, normally the problem is overheating in Formula E. But it, like, I don't think we're going to see like cars getting too cold. But I think there's going to be a point where your powertrain could do more because it's not as it usually would be screaming and at the thermal limits necessarily, but your tyres can't actually do anything else.
Yeah, the other sort of desert night races like a Bahrain, it's really hot in the day and then it goes down to just like quite hot in the evening because, you know, it can still be 25 degrees at night in Bahrain. Here it's about 20 degrees now at what, lunchtime-ish. So it does get pretty nippy. I'm packed a coat, you know.
Wow, I'm impressed. Does the revised format this weekend also make any difference with free practice on a Thursday, races on Friday and Saturday? Is that going to change anything for the drivers and the teams? Obviously, they're going to have to organise themselves to be ready a little bit earlier. But Matt, what do you think?
No, to be honest, I don't think it will change too much. Yes, they have a bit more time to debrief after the sessions and conditions won't sort of correlate exactly. But I think the biggest change will be, or in terms of format, will be sort of what they're doing with qualifying. So we've now got 4-minute group sessions instead of 6 minutes. So previously, and Jack will know this, having had to sort of narrate it, drivers do nothing for the first 4.5 minutes of the session. It's all about the final laps. And I think, you know, it spices it up, one, because there'll be more to see. And also, people react differently. It's more entertaining when you have to be reactive rather than proactive. It takes away the thinking time. So that should spice up. And so I think, you know, particularly coming to Saudi now, we've got the dust, as Hazel said, on the track. There's also been resurfaced as well. So the track will be completely green. So I expect, you know, all the Group 1, the championship contenders to really struggle. And then that tees up an exciting race. So I think it's that element that I'm sort of keeping an eye on more rather than the timetable as such. But hey, maybe others will disagree.
Actually, about the group qualifying, something that's really interesting is because Berlin shook up the order so much, there's a whole load of people who were front runners for the title last year. And in fact, the two winners in Diriyah last year, Sam Bird and Alexander Sims, are way down. They're going to be well down the groups just because they had such shocking ends of the season. So I think Sims and Bird, I might be wrong here, will be in, I think one of them might sneak into group two and the other's in group three, which is actually like, that's quite a significant advantage.
And you could have a debutante performing really well in the first race because they will by default be going out in group four. So as a result, someone like a Nick Cassidy in an Envision Virgin, which has a, you know, pretty good powertrain under it, could be, you know, right towards the front. Yeah, Sam Bird will be in group two. And you're right, Sims will be out in group three. So yeah, again, the Formula E qualifying format is just set up for interesting grids.
Is that something that frustrates you, Jack, in the end? Because F1 doesn't have the same philosophy behind it. I don't want to get into the fundamentals.
Have I said this to you before?
How long have we worked together? We've known each other for a fair amount of time.
There's just I'm torn about the group qualifying, basically, because I like it overall, because it mixes it up. But in a field of 26, when everyone's so even, you go into the championship finale with them starting, the protagonist starting 14th, 18th, 21st on the grid, and it's the battle to see who can finish 10th and get 1 point that'll give them the championship. And whilst in some ways that's cool, in a lot of ways that's cool, there are times that you want to see the championship contenders fighting it out together for the win. It swings and roundabouts. On the one hand, you do normal qualifying and you have Degrassi versus Buemi for the first three seasons or whatever with a little sprinkle of Piquet. But you do this format and you get 14 drivers in contention going into the final round of the championship and you have no idea what's going to happen. And Buemi and Van Dorn went from like 13th to 2nd on the final races in Berlin. Sometimes I long for the days of seeing the front runners at the front. But other times, I really enjoy the exciting racing that this qualifying format produces.
Nice.
I think it's also about the bigger picture. So, again, as a journalist, I love it when the pole sitter leads every lap. It's boring to watch, but it makes writing a report about it or analysing whether we're good so easy. But I think the bigger picture, and it's probably quite pertinent with Audi and BMW quitting the championship, is if you have this unpredictable qualifying format, it tees up an unpredictable race. So if you can have 8 different teams winning this season rather than, say, 3, then their boardrooms, the guys who decide where the money gets cashed, money gets spent, they're going, well, we get exposure. We can be competitive on our day. Therefore, we'll keep funding this, and Formula E sort of retains or keeps its house in order, really. Or it attracts new people because they can go, all right, you know, we've only within a year, you know, 2 years, we can be winning, and we get ourselves a little bit of a voice in this one. So, as a bigger picture, yeah, it's not organic or particularly sort of.
I know what you're trying to say, because it feels like it's a bit kind of gimmicky or something. But then you think, actually, it isn't gimmicky, because it is absolutely fair, because everyone in the championship goes out together. You know, someone's got to go out on track first. It only seems fair that it's those at the top of the championship. You put the bottom people out in the championship first every time, you're just going to destroy them and have the front runners running away. So it is, while sometimes it feels like a gimmick, it is actually pretty fair. So like Formula E, it's just something completely different to what we've seen before.
And very similar things used in the World Rally Championship, where the sort of points leader goes out on the stage first when it's sort of uncut and there's no grip. But, you know, we still have Ogier win every time he sits in a rally car. So it doesn't necessarily mean it's gonna make it more exciting. It just happens that it does so in Formula E.
I think also there's a massive overestimate of how much of a handicap Group 1 is. Like, every now and then we get a race where Group 1 sends you right to the back of the grid, but it's actually pretty rare. Like, the number of times that somebody gets into Super Bowl from Group 1, like compared to Group 4, for instance, the championship sort of tailors, I guess, as opposed to leaders, your chance is simply much, much higher. You might fluke it from Group 4, but the fact is you'll be eaten alive in the race. You'll slip back down so fast, because you're in an inefficient car that might have just managed to pull out a monster lap. Like Jack said, like it feels like a gimmick, but all qualifying is a gimmick. Like, I mean, ultimately you're going like, well, okay, we'll have Q1, 2, 3. Like, in Q2, you have to start on the tyres you used if you get through to Q1, you know. Like, everything is gimmicky. If you look at Le Mans qualifying, then that's pretty gimmicky as well. Like, ultimately you have to decide on a format. We can't have all the cars go out at the same time, because that would just be a bizarre 250 kilowatt queue. We kind of saw that in Berlin, actually, in Group 1, on whichever race it was, they all completely failed. Yeah, you have to come up with something. I don't actually think that it massively shakes up the order. You know, ultimately, the guys with the fastest cars won last year. You weren't seeing, like, weird results where a dragon managed to take 2 wins because they happened to be in Group 4. You know, ultimately the order shakes out roughly as you would expect it in terms of the performance. Drivers will always moan, and especially when they're in Group 1, but like it is what it is. And I do think my friend Rob Watts did some like statistical analysis of how badly Group 1 affects you, and it really isn't as much as they say.
I'm sure Jack's already done that this season, every season so far. He's all over the statistical analysis.
I actually haven't, and I'm actually gonna... Is that on Inside Electric?
It's not. I'll get Rob to dig it out. We should update it and put it back up.
I was thinking I must look at that, because last year, I think the Costa won the championship last year because of his Group 1 performances, because he was the top every time, so he was the only one that got into Super Pole. Everyone else was seventh or lower. Then once he was in Super Pole, he could take actual pole. And so to me, I thought Group 1 made a huge difference last year, or your performance in Group 1 at least. So I'd be interested to see that. Yeah.
So the final question I want to know is, put your money on who's going to win this race. Now, I appreciate this is Formula E, so it's not as formulaic. You cannot say Lewis Hamilton as the answer. Let's go Matt, Hazel, Jack.
I'm so glad you said win this race and not win the championship. I'm going to go Nyck de Vries. I think Mercedes was strong here on its debut last season. I can see Jack Nicklaus pulling faces, but you don't know who's going to win this any more than I do. So, but anyway, I think Nyck de Vries, he was really quick qualifier last year, really good race pace, but he was let down by the car. And Mercedes was strong here last year. So I think when it's a bit more uncertain, they have a new powertrain, a possible new advantage, I reckon that'll be enough to get him over the line. And I'm willing to place £10 on it with Jack Nicklaus.
Whoa!
which hopefully I can expense.
Don't tell Autosport. Hazel!
I am going to go with Sebastian Buemi. He was actually running quite strongly last year, but got into like a couple of incidents here. He hasn't won a race for ages again. So he's the driver who's won the most races in Formula E ever, but yet again last season he didn't win anything. He's had like one win since season three or something. And I think he's going to be absolutely raring for it.
Jack?
Buemi won 12 races, I think, in the first three seasons of Formula E, and he won one in the last three. So it's a bold call, Southwell. I think it's probably quite a good one. I'm going a bit left field because I'm not going to go as left field as Nyck de Vries, but I'm going a little René Rast. I'm going a little René Rast. He'll be out in group three for qualifying for the first race. Audi look quite strong. I'm going a cheeky René Rast, triple DTM champion. Yeah, René Rast. I'm going it. René Rast. I'm done. René Rast.
He's all in. Are you going to bet any money?
Yeah, we know you earn a lot as a TV commentator, Nicklaus. Go on, get open that checkbook.
Right, we're gonna let
yeah,
Jack
fine,
go.
Yeah, fine, yeah, fine. I'll do it. We'll do it. Yeah, we'll do it.
Okay. Good one. We're going to let Jack go. We're going to let everybody go. So thank you so much for joining us to our panel. I hope you really enjoy the very first race of this brand new Formula E season. Hopefully you've enjoyed this preview and it gives you a little taster of what you can view on BBC, Jack.
Yes, BBC iPlayer, BBC Sport website, BBC Red Button, everything.
And wherever you are in the world, I hope you enjoy watching it too. To all of you, stay safe out there in Saudi, and hopefully we'll see you soon. Bye for now.